check, 1, 2. Mic check, 1, 2. This is Daniel.
I think that's the start of the show right there. Welcome to the listening party. I'm Howie Howard. Got Nate Holt in the house as usual. Nate, what's up?
What's going on?
And we are joined by a guest for the first time. This is Daniel Glasscock from Lawrence, Kansas. And he's here to talk about his record, Friendship Acid, under the artist name, I'm looking to make sure I get this right, Love Undulates Violently, Consciousness Rises Above Fear. Welcome, Daniel.
You got it. How you doing?
I'm good. So I was surprised a couple, 3 weeks ago when you came to my front door, and I learned that Nate and I were not the only people in Lawrence, Nate's in Kansas City, who made a weirdo modern pandemic electro record.
Something like that, yeah.
Because you happen to do the same thing, or an adjacent thing.
Very, very much adjacent. I had no idea that you guys were into that sort of thing. I mean, I knew about Night Mode, of course, and I have most of your releases, I believe. I'm probably missing a few, but definitely got the most recent cassette releases, and I've got your CD of Dirac Spike. But I didn't know that you'd been working with Nate on stuff, and it's great how small the world can be sometimes.
It can be. So,
go ahead. Sorry, Hi.
Oh no, I was just saying it can be. What do you got, Nate?
I was just gonna say. I was gonna ask because I don't know. I see a lot of keyboard, real estate behind you. But what's your background? Like, what? Do you do electronic stuff, or do you a little bit of everything, or what's going on?
Well, I started off in high school. Trying to make psychedelic folk music because that was my thing. Loved Espers and Captain Beyond and a whole bunch of bands in between there. Cool. And just got into production out of necessity and have gradually built up a instrument library. And in most recent years, since probably about 2016, 2015, probably, I've jumped on the vintage keyboard trend and the analog domain, all hardware stuff. I'm not, a DAW-less snob about it, because I learned Pro Tools in college, and I'm not gonna unlearn it. I mean, it's too valuable a skill set. But yeah, I'd always been into stuff like Aphex Twin, and I mean, I listened to Analord. That's the Bible for me,
Okay.
And that's kind of what got me on the Roland kick, and then learned about all these, just going on vintage Synth Explorer. I found out about,
Yeah, I like that site.
Moog and Korg and, of course, Sequential. They're my people. I got more Sequentials than I got anything else, I think, so.
Yeah, you even have a shirt.
I even got a shirt, yep. Yeah, but I...
Nice, dude. Okay.
It's... Necessity is the mother invention whenever it comes to electro production. And I've been working on kind of electro style stuff since around 2014, 2015.
Cool. Yeah. I like this record, man. It's there's a lot of really cool, interesting parts. And yeah, man, I'm excited to listen to it.
Well, the feeling's mutual. Your guys' Orbital Breed album is fantastic, and I feel like I'm in good company tonight.
Oh, thanks, man. How are you still there?
I'm still here. So I wanted to clarify, the shirt is not analog, right?
It actually it is, yeah.
Oh, nice.
It was synthesized with manual components, non-digitally, I think, right? It's an arbitrary waterline, between analog and digital, and some of the best stuff is hybrid anyways, so I'm not a
For
purist
sure.
at all,
True
but,
that.
Nothing beats a good VCO.
So I don't know if you want to tell the story quick. Music's going to start in a couple, 3 minutes, but you started this record, you told me the other night, a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And then when the pandemic started, that kind of added some urgency to it.
Yeah, a little bit, just because, well, I'm not beholden to a whole lot of schedules anymore, you know. I've got several other bands that I work with in the live domain, and everything just went on hold, you know, when nobody could hang out anymore. I mean, I live with some people who I have a band with, Hypermortal, but this one was like, well, I normally meet with almost everybody on this record. I mean, each song is named after a person that I'm friends with. I normally meet with them on a fairly regular basis, and the pandemic hit, and it's like, well, I can't hang out with you, you know? So, I mean, I'd already had the concept in mind to make a stylistic encapsulation of each person, but, you know, I finally had no other choice but to just do it, you know, finish it up. But I've been working on it for about 2 years, if not three. It's always been something kind of like going on in the periphery while I'm recording other projects.
That's cool, man. I assume that it was probably all people you knew, but you confirmed that just now. That's cool, man. It'd be interesting to hear some stories behind it, because, yeah, like I said, there's a lot of interesting, cool vibes on there.
Yeah, man. Well, I tried to make it fit their personalities to some degree, make it fit the stories I've built of them in my mind. You know, it's a rough concept, and sometimes it was redactive, but you know, once I finally realized what I was doing, I was like, okay, I've got to tailor make each one of these as good as I can, otherwise one of my friends will think that their track is the weakest on the album, and thus they have the least amount of affection in my heart or something. So I just tried to make a banger every time.
There we go.
Here it comes.
Yeah, and here we go. Let's hear a little bit of Jane. Microtonal stuff going on. I feel like there's some of that Aphex Twin changing the tuning around a bit.
Yeah, this song's mostly comprised of stuff on the Prophet Rev 2 from Dave Smith. This was actually one of the first tracks I ever worked on with it.
I love that keyboard.
Yeah, it's everything I could ever want out of a keyboard, and it plays such a prominent role on the record. It's nearly on every track in some way, shape, or form, but this was one of the... I found a patch in a sequence and switched it to Arabic tuning because it has all those microtonal variations on it. And, nearly every song has some sort of microtonal, twist to it. Because love the Arabic setting. I love the
Yamaha. Because you can. It sounds good.
It sounds so good. And, you know, you just play a melody, you know, that would normally be equal temperament, and it goes off into a totally dark world. That way, you know, especially with that one in the Yamaha minor setting, I love both of those for just a little bit of warmth, a little bit of darkness. But yeah, this one's my neighbor Jane, and she and I like to sit out on the porch and talk about her life. She's in her 70s, and so she's been through a lot of tragedies, but she just muscles through, and you know, she's still a very vivacious and exciting person to talk to, despite, you know, the trials and tribulations of a long life.
And Joel is up next. You guys, Royce is in the lobby. I'm going to let him in. We'll bring Royce up to speed if we can.
Sweet.
Royce, are you there?
I am here.
Hey, welcome. We are about 12 minutes into recording, so I'm going to try and get you synced up. If you want to put your... put your cursor at the 12-minute mark in Pro Tools of the file. I'll give you a countdown to 12 minutes, and we'll just get you set up there. Does that work for you?
What are these drums, man?
This is a Boss DR-880. One of my favorite sequencers, drum machines, whatever have you. And it's... I ran it through a bunch of stomp boxes, saturators, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I love them.
The song... Joel is my bandmate in a band called Serene Fiend.
Oh, yeah, man. Totally.
Yeah. And he is all about saturation.
Yeah.
And taking the drums and just mangling them and get them as crunchy as possible. And also he plays a mean slide, like lap steel slide guitar.
Fabulous guitar player.
Yeah. I tried to hit that vibe with it for him.
Rory said he's trying to reconnect.
All right.
Just got in.
Welcome back, man.
Thank you.
What's up, Royce?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing all right, man. Good to see you.
Good seeing you.
Oh, and pleased to meet you, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Where are you guys at? What did I miss?
We're in the middle of the second song. So if you want to get your cursor queued up to... 14 minutes. I can count you in at 14 minutes, and we'll get you synced up with us. That's in the WAV file.
Yeah. Give me a second.
Sure thing.
Okay.
We got about 20 seconds, and we can always move the timer down.
And if you guys want to continue while I try to get situated.
What are the synths you're using on this song?
So this one's mostly Rev 2. Once again, this and Jane were like both kind of like the earliest tracks I started working on for this particular project. But it's mostly Rev 2 all the way through.
Like even that kind of arpeggiated kind of guitar sounding.
The real distorted. 303 sound. That's just a TB3.
Oh,
thus the acid.
Yeah,
of the album. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not. I don't think any acid purist would consider this album actual acid. But I tried to get the TB3 and the 808 or the 909 on every track. You know.
I used a lot of the Volca bass. That had a lot of kind of acid.
Yeah.
Feel to it.
Yeah, that was actually one of my first synths.
It's cool, man.
It's really cool. I like the triple oscillator on the thing.
Yes.
And I did a lot of work with that back probably 2014 or so. But
because couldn't you sequence each one of them?
Yeah. You could have a separate sequence running on all of them.
Yeah. I like that track. We didn't talk too much about it, but I dug it.
Thanks,
it's
man.
It's got an epic kind of feel.
Yeah.
I'm going for epic every time. Every time, but you know.
There's some acid.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah. This one's probably the most acid of the acid album. But it's called Sarah. At the start of the track, it's in 7/8, and it moves to 4/4. I was kind of inspired by like Luke Biebert, who likes to mess around with different time signatures with the same acid aesthetic, and they kind of just fight back and forth between the two time signatures, creates a cool polyrhythmic.
I like messing with time as well.
It's really fun to listen to the record with you because I was telling you the other night, I mean, it's a very dense record. I still feel that way. But the uniqueness of each song is jumping out at me a little bit more.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Well, I mean, they are individuals. I try to tailor make it, you know, so each one has its own color, you know, like.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to imply they all sound the same. It's just they all have so much going on.
Yeah.
They transition. I mean, the sequence of it is very nice. They transition nicely from one to the next one. And so I've kind of heard it mostly as one big block.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't paid attention so much to the breaks and long story short, I'm enjoying this.
Cool. Were you saying something, Nate?
I was. Let me try to get back there.
Sorry, Nate.
Oh, you're fine. Oh, yeah, I was just saying, messing around with time signatures and kind of playing, like, just hinting at this or that. With different like rhythms and it's fun to do. I like listening to it. It's just it doesn't seem like it gets boring. It kind of like it just naturally like moves forward somehow.
Yeah, well, it plays with expectation. That's kind of like one of my tricks is just to like, even if it's a simple thing in the sequence, you know, changing the beat, turning the beat around a little bit, like it definitely makes it more like disorienting and not just like elevator music.
Sure.
Number four, Jeff.
Thank you.
like a mystery is afoot. How do your tracks start?
Yeah.
Most of the time, it's with a patch, you know, just flipping through presets. I'm like, that sounds okay. It'd sound better if I did this. And then I hit a chord. But other times, like in the last song with Sarah, I wake up and I have melodies kind of stuck in my head, and I'll just grab my phone real quick and sort of sing a rough approximation into it. And I'm like, okay, now I have that, you know, floating in the ether. And then I, you know, set down chord progressions. You know, I'll spend usually about a day on a track before it gets any good. You know, usually want to put down decent texture, timbral thing. And then I try and work in any sort of like melodic influx, you know, a reason for it to be catchy and not just like, oh, four on the floor, you know, waves of sound, whatever, wild random oscillations. That's the fun part later on when it's finally been informed with like the principle of the song, which is like on this one.
Yeah,
you know, and that's kind of how it starts, and then it's just a layers game after that, and running all sorts of improvisations over it, taking stuff out, chopping stuff up.
Do a lot of editing.
Oh, it's mostly editing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I screw up constantly. I'm a terrible keyboard player. I just suck.
Me too.
And, yeah, so you can commiserate with me here.
I will take 20 tries to do something just because I'm like, I wasn't that. And then I'll stitch them together.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and sometimes it works out better that way.
It really does, because you kind of get the... You know, the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is always the good stuff.
So just got to point out that filter sweep there. That's from this Moog Opus 3 that I did a restoration on. It's a sweet little string synth from 1980. And... my God, it's just the most, but those Moogs, they don't make a better filter. The ladder filter is just, it was perfect from day one, it seems like.
And it sounds like we're in the 80s.
Yeah, the drums have an 80s feel. The snare.
This is one Royce would say belongs in an 80s action film.
Well, sounds like Royce is just starting the album now.
Is that me playing that?
Yeah.
It was not intentional. I have no idea where that's going.
Sounds like a remix.
Yeah, Royce, we're about to hit the 25-minute mark.
Drums, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, that little section reminds me of you, Nate, with the little drums swirling around. And...
No, I mean, I just, yeah, well, I like whatever you're doing there, man. I you can talk about it or not, but it's fucking cool.
Well, that's that TR-8, man. I'll swear by that drum machine. It's fantastic. I was lucky enough to get it updated to have the 707 sounds on it and the 606. But, yeah, I love it. I use it. It's on every track on this album.
Good to know. I never, had a chance to try one out, but it sounds really good, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you can do just as well with samples and a DAW and stuff, but I like the hands-on thing. It's also got that scatter function, which you hear the kind of glitching out drums. But I did want to mention that almost all the drums also are running through Howie's Falcon Drive.
Sweet, on the drums?
Yeah, for almost every snare track, anytime you hear any delay, that's a Falcon Drive straight into a delay from the snare or from the clap or whatever. It's just a damn good drive for making that nice crunchy whisper in the snare.
Thanks, man. That's rad. I didn't know that. That's very cool.
It's definitely an MVP on the album. So yeah, this one's about my friend Alex, and she's been going through some rough times, but she's one of the most bubbly, excitable people I've ever met. So I think I try and capture the melancholy and the drive of her spirit in this one.
So I'm at like 27 and a half minutes. Is that where you guys are?
Yeah.
Real close. Let's roll with it.
At 27.
Gotcha. I'm right there now. 27.
Cool. Welcome aboard.
No, sorry.
No, you're good. It's good to have you.
Who is this?
This is Travis. He's the drummer I've worked with the most in my life. He's also my roommate and bandmate. And he's a wild guy. He's a wild man. He's a little loopy.
Travis, what do you mean? Like, this whole arrangement is Travis?
Each song on the record is named for a friend of mine.
And it sort of
tries to encapsulate who they are. If they're musicians, I try and work in something stylistically that they do.
Well, Travis has got a dope-ass vibe, man.
Yeah, he does. Quite literally.
Oh, this is super tight.
Is that a prophet again? Or the prophet again?
That is a OB6.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you hear a lead on the album, it's usually an OB6.
Okay, cool.
And I also use this Touche Expressive E controller. It does about 6 extra parameters that a mod wheel or a pitch wheel doesn't do.
Wow, and, I have not seen one of those.
They're fantastic. It's like a magnetic plate, and then like you can affect based on the gyroscope a different parameter.
Crazy.
And it's touch sensitive. Yeah. But if you're wondering like why is it warping and doing that weird awful sounding thing, well that's just me screwing it up with my hand.
No, it just it. It just sounds like it just sounds warbly. I didn't really think about it too much, but that's cool how it became warbly.
I remember seeing YouTube, tons of YouTube ads for those a couple years ago.
Yeah, I don't think they did too well. I think people thought they were too gimmicky or something.
Oh, but I thought they looked cool. I've never played one, but I thought they looked cool.
They're fantastic, man. You can use them percussively. Whatever. I use it with a Launchpad Pro. So I'm, you know, like right hand you know, just playing the pad and the left hand's sort of expressing with it.
And where is this album available?
It is available on lovecraft.bandcamp.com. It's also on Spotify, all the streaming sources and stuff. So yeah, just look for this weird looking picture. And that's what you're gonna get.
Alright.
So yeah, it's Love Undulates Violently, Consciousness Rises Above Fear. Long pedantic name.
I got it. When did you start making this record?
Oh, around the end of 2017, mostly 2018, and then got back. It's just been it's kind of like I do a song in between other major releases, and this is sort of a compilation of a lot of stuff I've done over the last 3-4 years. But the real primary recording started around 2018, I think.
Oh, I love that.
This one's Lily. Lily is my cat.
So that's why she gets the short one then, I see.
Yeah, she's not gonna hold it against me that she's got the short straw on the album. I think it's probably the most literal track though.
It sounds like a cat.
Yeah, that tabla sounding thing, that's the sound of her crunchies hitting the bowl whenever I'm trying to sleep in the morning.
Do you have a few different elements panned, or are you doing some sort of auto panning on something?
No, there's mostly it's I made sort of a generative patch on some Roland Boutique units. And they're kind of doing the that sort of like flies around and pops open and the filter shuts real quick like a square wave LFO. And then everything else was just sort of like hand designed panning.
And we go into Sam, which has become one of my kind of early favorites. Partially because I know Sam a little bit, so I have a little of the extra kind of layer.
Yeah. I definitely get that a lot from the outsiders who've listened to the album. They really dig this track for some reason. As a side note to Nate, I know you were talking about the Moog grandmother during the Orbital Debris release.
Yeah.
And the percussion on here is all from a grandmother.
Oh, very nice.
I tried to do sort of a Trent Reznor-ish, you know, generative patch with that one.
Yeah, I've been meaning to mess around with some more of the percussive patching on it.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah, it's there's so much you can do. It's endless fun.
What are you triggering with for that? Is it MIDI notes or?
No, that's just the patch. It's
okay.
It's self-generating, you know. So, it's a feedback, and I don't even have the sequencer running. It just, you hold down a note. And it does this. I couldn't tell you the routing to save my life. It was just an hour of like, oh, plug this in here, and turn this up, you know.
I mean, unless you're a, you know, you document everything, it really doesn't matter what the patch is because it's gone.
Hell no. Hell no. I ain't gonna document this.
I would probably suck in a professional studio. Like, how'd you do that? I don't know. Should've asked me yesterday. Sam is the guitarist in my band, both in Hypermortal and in Serene Fiend. And when it takes its turn here, just a second, I think you'll maybe see why.
Total compliment, because it's something that I try to go for when I make music, which is you can listen to this and listen to details and it's super interesting, but I listen to it on repeat when I'm working, like, you know, 3 or 4 times on repeat at work, and it sits in the background.
I think that's one of the main benefits of instrumental formats, is nothing is like immediately arresting to you, doesn't force you to pay attention, but when you do, you get rewarded for it.
Yeah.
Is this a real blending of Lovecraft and Hypermortal? Like, a few tweaks, this could almost be a Hypermortal kind of interlude or something.
Oh, I think we're inextricably linked, of course, you know, melodically and rhythmically. We all love most of the same kind of music. This is kind of like an homage to Manuel Gutsching and his record E2 through E4. And I tried to blend it a little bit with Fela Kuti sensibilities, you know, because Sam loves that stuff. And
sweet.
And I tried to do him justice with the guitar parts. He's a massively better guitarist than I am, but, you know, do what I can.
That melody is kind of Fela Kuti.
Yeah, for sure. This part right here.
Yeah.
Your musical background?
I've just been playing music since I was a little kid, you know. Got a couple bands here in town. And recently got into electro about 5 years ago. 6 years ago, maybe. 7. I don't know. I kind of lose track.
Is this a TR-8 again on drums?
Yeah, that's basically a 909 emulation on there.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the 909, you know, pretty partial to it.
like that.
Thank you.
Who's this?
This is Jenny.
See, I think this one and the next one are probably up in my top tracks of the year.
I really don't know why, too.
Nice. Yeah, these
not
definitely...
Not that the other ones are... the last one is badass, too, but for some reason, every time these come on, when they're in rotation, I'm like, okay, yeah, it's...
Yeah, these definitely got a lot of soul to them. I tried to put a lot of that in there.
On the grid versus off, because like that, the one with the grandmother percussion, that probably wasn't to a grid, right? You did the percussion first.
No, I don't use a grid in, like, I don't know. You might have noticed kind of a burial feel in the Jeff track, and he's one of my idols. Burial. I don't know. The UK garage dubstep kind of guy.
Yeah,
and he doesn't do anything to a grid. He says he does it all in SoundForge and, you know, manually links up the beats and stuff. He doesn't do any of that stuff, and I kind of take that as like a challenge, a personal ethos kind of thing. If it sounds right, then I don't need it quantized, you know. And generally, you get better swing and weird variations in rhythm whenever it's slightly off, you know, and it's not set to a grid. It sucks mixing, because, like, sometimes, you know, it might not fire off the compressor properly, but ultimately, as a compositional tool, I prefer no grid whatsoever. You know, if I need a click track, I'll use that, but I'm not beholden to it, and I'll definitely stretch it out if I can.
That's cool.
Dude, there's a little bit of a Radiohead in that melody. I think it's... Letdown, I'm thinking.
Oh, maybe so, man. I love Radiohead. And Sarah, I have like a direct homage to Dollars and Cents.
Okay.
With
I'm gonna have to listen to that
synth line. Yeah, man. Obviously, one of the main reasons I got a Prophet in the first place was Tom York. So.
Yeah.
I think you're right, Nate. The guitar, where it goes like. Da, 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 da.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's
Yeah. That drone there was made with a grandmother as well.
Sweet. I'm going to mess around with that for sure.
Yeah, man, it's a good tool. I sold mine, but what are you going to do? Yeah, this one's Casey, and Casey has been my best friend since we were little kids. We both love Aphex Twin.
Okay.
And so this is probably the most direct Analord style song that I tried out.
I love this song.
a nice arrangement how the parts weave together and start and end.
Okay, here comes one of my favorite filter sweeps on the whole record. Once again, the Moog Opus 3. Oh, and I gotta give shout out to Sam from Gnarly Davidson for loaning that out to me. It was in a sad state and fixed it up. Been using it ever since.
Sounds
beautiful. It's just like from outer space or something, man.
Right, right.
It was blessed by angels. I wanted to point out that with acid music, it's always about, you know, the filter sweep, the distortion, that sort of thing. But I noticed in Prince's music that, you know, he'd always run his drums through flangers and phasers and stuff like that. And, you know, like one of my favorite tracks is Erotic City. And so any chance I got to run, you know, the rim clicks or the snare or something through a flange, it was just immediate Minneapolis sound for me. Just decontextualize it, and it's, you know, weird acid music.
I've got my favorite phaser for drums is a Ibanez PM7.
Oh, yeah.
It's from the Tone Lock series where the buttons would push in. They're gray, you know. And
yeah, yeah.
That phaser, analog phaser, killer, and it's got a awesome control where you set the center frequency of the sweep.
Uh-huh.
So you can put it on a mono, you can put it like on a full kit and move the center frequency up so it's only affecting like the hats and the cymbals and it's not touching the kick or the snare.
Yeah, man. Nice. Dude, those old Ibanez boxes are primo. I love the 10 series. I use like their modulated delay, the Session Man, on a lot of stuff because they sound so good. Like,
yeah, I love the flanger from the 10 series too, the yellow flanger.
Yes, yes.
So this is Josh, right?
Yep, Josh is Josh and Jeff are both in a band with Travis called Brangia, and they used to practice in our basement quite a bit, and I think a lot of Josh's musical ideas, I tried to incorporate a few of the motifs that I sort of associate with him. once again, that is the good old OB6.
Very
with
nice.
The Touche in combination. So you get that sort of like vocal muting to it. It's a very versatile combo. But the sort of pulsing drums there, definitely inspired by Howie's Dirac Spike Night Mode album. I ran an MS-10 into a DoD FX-33 buzz box.
Nice.
And it just had the right timbre for me, and definitely gave me like Tangerine Dream vibes and all that. But in addition to sort of emulating Josh's musical ideas, he gave me a painting, and it's this really dark green painting that he did, and I really wanted to capture that with this mood piece. It's definitely the most indulgent of the whole album, but it's like, you know, a trip into darkness.
Do you have synesthesia with the green painting? And
I'm not gonna make that claim, but I definitely close my eyes and have a coloration of sound, you know, in my mind. It's not a set system or anything, but I definitely get very that. It's how I decide whether or not I like something. You know, if the timbre's right, the beat's there, the mood and tone is just right, then I'm like, I'm on it. That's why I really dug Orbital Debris, because it was just like, oh man, that hits the spot. That's just the right vibration for me.
Well, thank you for saying that, man.
I really mean it. I really mean it. It's a fantastic record.
Do you want to talk about, like, I think I'm hearing something in what you're saying about the importance of intuition and just kind of experience that's unmediated by conscious thought or words or analysis? What role does intuition play for you?
The subconscious, it's, I've always tried to tap into that compositionally with music, because it's like ultimately a feeling, an emotion. It's not you can categorize it in so many different ways, and, you know, doing that simultaneous with the emotional aspect is important. But, like, when I was doing this record, you know, there wasn't the plan. You know, there wasn't the concept of the record until it formed from, you know, at least several months of sort of raw tracks. Like, it came from just listening as hard as I could to what I was doing, sitting there, spending the time, and maybe, you know, being a little off my face to be, you know, in touch, in tune with the vibrations. Like, it's good to be in that. You really just have to be in, like, a magical mindset where you're forcing out, you know, the distractions of the world, all the stresses that you got, and it is an intuitive thing, because all the improvisations are definitely an emotional outpouring. It's like, I'm not a fantastic keyboardist, I'm not even a very good keyboardist, but I knew where I wanted to travel. I knew where my soul wanted to go with these songs, almost from, like, the minute I sat down and heard the first patch, you know, like I was alluding to earlier. Like, the SY-77 on this track, that really deep, rumbling horn, it's like, you know, it's calling out from the pits of Hades, you know, as you're going across the river Styx. And it's like, okay, I gotta track down Charon, you know, and give him my coin here. You know, you can free associate however you want with the thing. But ultimately, it just comes down to how you feel about it when you're playing it. I really like the quiet parts between the song. It's the best place to talk over it.
Yeah, actually, this one and the next one too are up there on my if I had to pick favorites.
This one's my buddy Bobby, who is in a band called Ask an Adult, and recently he's made his forays into Halloween music. So this was my
That's my wife Amber's favorite holiday.
Yeah.
I should I'll ask you where his music is and link her to it, because she's a hot Halloween fanatic.
I think he's the perfect fit for it. I think you'd really dig his stuff. His name's Bobby Youngblood on Spotify and on Bandcamp.
Bobby Youngblood?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, it's perfect timing.
Yeah.
Funk to it, I think.
I can't leave the funk out, man.
Gotta have that funk.
You gotta have it. Everything. Even the slow songs. So that beat is a approximation of a stock beat from a Roland CR-78.
That's where the one there comes from?
Yeah, they're samples, unfortunately. I couldn't get a hold of a real one. They're only like $5,000 a piece or something, if they even work. But, yeah, I love the sound of the CR-78, that old organ-style ace-tone rhythm section. It very much screams Halloween to me.
Just showed up.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Love me some Oberheim. This wind sound, that is the chorus noise of a Roland JX3P, and that's one of my favorite boards. It features pretty prominently in this next one, which is my self-portrait.
Ah, so that explains the title, okay.
Yeah. I have various pseudonyms, but Dirty Dick is my alter ego in a group called Softcore Syndicate. And I've been working on a massive funk R&B opus that hopefully I'll have done in the next 5 years, but no promises. But this one was kind of an outtake from that because the bass is too heavy. There's no place for vocals. I guess you'll see.
No, I really, really like this song too, man.
Were you a Cameo fan?
Oh yeah. Yes, I love Cameo. Yeah, I was kind of going with this one for Afrika Bambaataa Nucleus kind of vibes.
Oh, I got I can hear that.
I don't know if I think it stands out from the rest of the tracks by itself. It's just got a lot of energy to it. And it seems just like a kind of an appendage, a good appendage.
Yeah.
Wow.
So if we've had some Prince, this is like some Morris Day, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. It's, you know, it's just my love of 80s R&B, you know, SOS band, Jammin' Lewis. But, I mean, really, I gotta give up all the respect to the person who got me into it, which was Dame Funk. I mean, I don't know if you guys heard him, but he's modern boogie, you know, just inspired me to get a JX3P. He's turned me on to so much good music, like Slave, Steve Arrington, Clear, these kind of bands. It's you know, boogie is everything I've aspired towards. I just didn't realize it until the last few years. D-Train. The sound of a dying JX3P.
What do you mean by dying?
I mean, it's literally dying. Like, the sound is going out on that board. It's in the shop right now.
Oh.
But it just started crapping out at the end of the take, and I was like, well,
it sounds badass.
The end.
I wouldn't have to do much processing. I thought it was some cool effects you were doing.
No, that's just a weird fluke in that particular board. It something was going out on it, and not even my tech knows what the hell is wrong with it. we got it fixed up enough that it shouldn't do that anymore, but we'll see. I mean, they are old boards. It's 1983 when that thing came out, so things older than me.
Wow.
But there it is. That's the record.
Friendship Acid by Love Undulates Violently, Consciousness Rises Above Fear. I did it from memory.
Nice. There you go. Or Lovecraft for short. You know, if if you're into the whole brevity thing.
Yeah.
So it's, I'd say it's a massive record. It's a dense record. It's a fun record. It's a diverse record. Covers a lot of territory. There's a lot to dig into. But I agree with Nate. Like, I throw it on while I'm at work and just kind of let it wash over me, and that works too.
Yeah. All purpose.
And what's on this graphic?
That picture is it's some photos taken by a professor at Emporia State University. His name is Larry Schwarm, and this was his wife, I guess, at a New Year's party. And he did a series of photos of flashers wearing Nixon masks. And the concept, I guess, behind it was just because, you know, Nixon, he was kind of a douche, and he was, and the liberation movement was happening right around the same time as Vietnam and all that, and so that was his sort of political statement at the time. I think he disavows some of his 70s work because he's much more like landscape and, you know, natural environment and stuff, less political stuff. But I thought it was fitting because I got that photo set from my friend Jane, who is, of course, first track. And that came from her friend who passed away. His name is Ron Brune. He was a writer for the Wall Street Journal, I believe, doing classical music reviews, music. And then, you know, the oldest thing on the record is from 1978, an MS-10, a Korg MS-10. And I thought, well, there's the connections of all our friends from the past. It's a celebration of the past while the political statement still stands true. We live under an authoritarian goon who, you know, wants to tell us what to do with our lives, our bodies, whatever, you know, normalize all this for some stupid, you know, political agenda. And then also it's Richard Nixon, Dirty Dick. Dirty Dick's the last track. It's too perfect. How could I pass this up? So comes full circle, friendship acid, you know. Don't think about it. It just makes sense.
No, I love the title.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's not, like I said, it's not a, you know, an acid purist would probably not be putting this in their DJ set. But, you know, it's my take on acid, you know. It came from a very acidic place.
Well, I think there's
so many levels. There's so many levels to it, too, man. So many levels.
It just blooms out.
Yeah.
I can taste the colors.
It's like an onion. Just peel it back.
A wheel within a wheel, man.
Is that the space you're in? Is that where you created most of this record?
Yeah, most of it, yeah. I mean, I'm not a hippie or anything, you know. But no, I sometimes it takes a little, you know, chemical influence to make it all set right, you know what I mean, to get you in the right emotional state. So but don't do drugs, kids. But I'm glad you guys, you know, you dig it, you know. I dig all your guys' music. I'm just thankful to be amongst like minds, you know.
Well, I like this, how we were sitting down and just talking about records and that. And so far, this has been a really cool hangout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Royce, I was listening to some of your music before we started up. That track Move Your Body.
Oh, yeah.
That is some good shit, man. I really dig that.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I did that with Dan Matic a few years ago. Like,
I don't know, 2016 or something like that. 2017, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I just, like, I make stuff and then I try not to think about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's done. Well, why do you ever need to acknowledge it exists again? Yeah. Yeah, that's you know, there's always a honeymoon period to making your music, you know, because you spend hours, days working on a track, and then it's done. Well, I'm sick of that now. Let's get on to something else here, you know.
Now that it's, like, the best it's probably ever going to be, or at least at this point, I'm tired of listening to it.
Yeah, because it's never actually done.
Yeah,
because
you just
give up on it and finish it.
Yeah,
you abandon it and move on to the next one. Yeah,
exactly. That's definitely how it felt on some of those tracks. But I don't know. I've listened to it quite a bit more in the honeymoon stage than I have on past records, at least over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. And each time there's still a little bit of that ASMR on some spots, and I'm like, okay, maybe I'm on to something finally. You know, it's encouraging at the very least.
Oh, man, that's a great body of work. You should be proud of that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you.
It felt real good. Seriously. I love hearing, like, just music that you can just listen to. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to say, oh, here comes the bridge. Here comes the...
Yeah. Well, eschewing traditional formulas in songs has always been an MO for me, whether it's in the rock paradigm or folk music or whatever. You know, because we've built up this sort of canon of expectations in genre, you know, and then you pigeonhole your you know, you focus your attention towards that expectation, and then when it's not fulfilled, well, you're like, oh, this music sucks. But if you know enough about, you know, like most producers, musicians who have that language, that auditory language, you can play with it and screw it up on purpose, and that's some of the most fulfilling music. Like I mentioned Burial earlier, and of course Prince. Like, they were just fantastic at destroying your expectations.
Yeah.
And then rebuilding the way you're supposed to listen to a song, even if it was a simple song.
Yeah. Less is more.
Yeah, exactly. Less is more. You can always take something away from a track and it'll sound better, you know. Like When Doves Cry, you know, take the bass out. I mean, I know that's pretty go-to kind of example, but yeah, take the bass out. Oh, wow. Goes to number one or whatever. I mean, who doesn't like When Doves Cry? Do I miss the bass? Maybe. But you got live versions for that, you know. The record version's perfect.
The only person who didn't like it was Prince.
Really? No way. I thought he was the one who took it out.
Man.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
No, I just meant, like, the only person who doesn't like When Doves Cry.
Oh, really?
He came to Kemper, he wouldn't do any of those, like, classic hits or anything like that. He was like, nope, I'm past that. You guys got to hear my new music. That's what it is.
I can feel that. You know, when you're 20 or 30 years on from that, you know, do you really want to play, you know, Little Bo Peep or whatever?
Right.
You know, when you're, I don't know, maybe some rock dudes, like, are just fine with playing something that they wrote in 1962. But, you know, like, Prince, some of his best stuff came out, like, right before he died. I'd want to showcase that instead of, you know, just play I Would Die For You for the nine millionth time.
That's exactly right.
Well, what is this, a Prince appreciation meetup now?
We can turn into that.
Okay, that's fine with me, you know. Let's do it.
I think we're gonna have a tough time playing the music though.
Yeah, probably get flagged. Although, no, I guess he's not around to be so much of a stickler about it anymore, unfortunately.
Well, the estate's around, and they're doing an excellent job of separating me from my money.
Yeah. Did you drop some on that on the Sign of the Times box set that's coming out?
I haven't done Sign of the Times yet. I'm still honestly absorbing the 1999 box set from a year ago.
Did you get a hold of that one? I was looking for it. I missed out.
Super, that... super good. It sounds so... And we maybe ought to wrap this up. This is a long one, but while we're here, I got a compliment. I've been, you know, AVing the box set stuff against my vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all sounds fantastic, but I gave 1999 a hard comparison, and I kept checking, kept checking, kept checking, because I thought this can't be true. I prefer the remastered mixes.
Really?
They're so clear, but to me, they have all the character. They bring back all the memories. They're so good.
Now, did Sylvia Massey oversee those, the remixes, or... remasters?
The estate hired a guy. I don't know his name off the top of my head. But I don't know. I mean, she may have mastered them. I don't know that he does. I don't know that he literally does every step of the process.
Okay.
But whoever's doing it, they sound fantastic.
Man, some of that stuff from the vault, I'm like, why couldn't you just put this out when I was younger? You know? Like, Wonderful Ass off of Purple Rain. Good God. Just the perfect track doesn't exist. Oh, hold up. Have you heard Wonderful Ass? Man, he's so good. We really lost a bodhisattva whenever he passed on to the next realm. But in the meantime, we got some other good musicians, like, you know, the four of us and...
Oh, that's... That's blasphemous. Don't put me on that level. Don't even think about it.
I'll see you guys later on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we got to end this.
On that note.
Parting thoughts on...
I was trying to find out who remastered 1999, but I cannot find it.
Oh, you're searching for it now?
Yeah, but...
I'll find it for you.
Okay.
Last call for thoughts on Friendship Acid? Going once?
Okay, well...
All right.
Great job of talking us through your record, though, man. Like...
Yeah, that was super interesting, man, and it was really good meeting you, and I really enjoyed it. It's super fun, and I appreciate the time.
Well, thanks for the feedback, guys. I love hanging out with you guys, and obviously respect you from a artistic standpoint. You know, you keep doing what you're doing. Your stuff is rubbing off on me. Hopefully, I'll rub off on you a little bit aesthetically.
Distanced mm-hmm. rubbing off.
It's just nice to see, four non-masked faces for once in my life, you know?
Yeah. True that.
In a safe environment, at least.
True that.
No doubt.
That's true. So thanks, Daniel. Thanks to everybody who's listened to the listening party. Thanks for joining us. We will be back. And stay safe until then. Later, everybody.
Take care, y'all. Oh,